What is up, everyone? Welcome to A Theology of Hustle, where we talk about work, ministry, and the people who make an art out of bringing them together. I'm really excited for this episode 20 of A Theology of Hustle. Kind of crazy that we're already at 20 episodes. And today I'm talking to John. Now, just to give you a little background, I have a good friend named Aaron, and we were talking about the podcast, and he urged me to move the podcast in certain directions where I talk about theology more explicitly. You know, when you tune into A Theology of Hustle, you hear about people's stories. You hear about what they, how they live out their job, how they do what they do, what they love about their job. So you're getting theology, but implicitly, you're sort of working it out. And he challenged me to sort of talk about the theology more explicitly, delve into the places where you really learn about the theology of work. And so today's episode is that. It is scratching that theology itch if you have had it and not been satisfied so far with A Theology of Hustle. And so John is a guy who has written a book called Every Job a Parable, and I found the book so good. It is so good. You need to read it. It's very helpful. It's very readable, very understandable. But in today's episode, we really delve into the theology from creation to new creation. What is our job? What do our jobs mean? What are they there for? And it's just a really great interview. We also get into a lot of his personal life and some of his struggles and just where he's at in life. And he's very transparent, very vulnerable. And I think you're just really going to enjoy this episode. So yeah, get out there. Will you go ahead and give me a review if you think about it, or while you're thinking about it, give me a review and make sure and just share this episode. I'd love for you to just get the word out about John and what he's doing and about this podcast and what you enjoy about it. So yeah, make sure you follow me on all the social medias at Theology of Hustle and enjoy this interview with John. Hey, John, I really appreciate you talking to me and coming on the podcast. It's exciting to get to chat with you a little bit.
Hey, Curry, thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, I think so. Are you in Canada right now?
I'm in Canada right now.
Okay, so you're officially my first international podcast.
Awesome.
So things are getting big now.
No pressure to get it right.
Well, why don't we jump off here and get started with you sort of telling us about yourself and a little bit of your story?
Sure. I am a ordained minister in the Christian Reformed Church for the past 22 years. I've been working as a pastor, church planter, came to Calgary from Toronto, Ontario, 23 years ago. We started a little church called New Hope Church. I left there about a year ago. I'm now in a time of transition, looking at writing, teaching a little bit at Ambrose University and Seminary here in Calgary, and some other stuff. So I'm in a bit of a vocational no man's land, the wilderness myself. So it's a little bit ironic that we're going to talk about my book about finding God at work. Just right. I mean, a lot of the things I wrote about in terms of the theology and nature of vocation, I'm kind of have to really live them now and apply some of this stuff. But yeah, I used to be a real estate developer up until age 29 back in Toronto. So I built shopping centers, office buildings, stuff like that. And then got the call through a kind of a personal confrontation or confession of a lot of crap going on in my life to a pastor. I'm Reformed theologically, so my conversion experience is thoroughly Reformed in that I was not planning on telling anybody about those things in my life. And then one day a pastor asked me how I was doing, and I kind of told him in a parking lot after a church meeting. So a huge spiritual awakening happened there. And then 3 months later, my wife and I had our third child born, who has Down syndrome. And that was God's kind of 1-2 punch in terms of waking up, reorienting me into formal ministry. I mean, if you've read my book, I'm not saying ministry is the only place where ministry happens at all. And yet, again, maybe ironically, God calls a guy out of the business world to get to a point 22 years later where he's writing a book about finding God in the business world and in other kinds of work. So yeah, was that for a while and then had that big, big wake up call and did this church plant, which was fantastic. Just got a lot of attention around this idea that this workbook is about. I wrote a book before this called The Day Metallica Came to Church about God and pop culture. And this one's about God in vocation. I'm writing a book about God and science now. So my gig is God in, God in creation, God moving by his spirit in palpable, authoritative ways that we can know and experience and be awake to and be encouraged by and given wisdom through and directed by and empowered by, not just in church work, but in our work. And to me, it's such a deeply compelling idea that we can know God in everything that we do in our lives. Once we know him through the scriptures, once, you know, this very explicit black and white revelation of God, of Jesus, the gospel, through the Bible transforms us, wakes us up. John Calvin said it's like a pair of glasses that you put on that enable you to see God in the world. Or maybe it's a window through which you see that you're seen by God in all that you do and equipped and image him. So that idea that's been the sort of thread through everything I've done in ministry over the last 22 years. And it was part of my calling when my son was born with Down syndrome. I had this huge providential story play out, which now looking back, I mean, the seeds of this worldview of God speaks creation in the Bible was planted right in that calling process and has been unfolding itself ever since, just getting bigger and bigger and going deeper and deeper with each of the books and all of the sermons on the Bible and creation that I've preached over the years. So yeah, that's been my story.
That's cool. I've really enjoyed getting to look through all your stuff. I'm going to go ahead and put links in the show notes so everybody can see some of that stuff. Your blog, the Metallica book, I'm going to have to go back and read. I've read the Every Job is a Parable, but yeah. I'm a huge Metallica fan. And, you know, bringing that into church is just, I love it. But I loved hearing about your story and your vulnerability, especially with your story with your son and your call to ministry and all of that stuff. So this is so exciting because you have been doing what I'm working on in a lot of ways, but just for a lot longer. So I can't wait to sort of pick your brain on all of this stuff. Where should we jump off here? How did the whole sermon series on vocation sort of come to be and can you give us the sort of the genesis of that?
Yeah. Well, as I said, I was kind of, you know, God everywhere in the world, right? So searching for the everywhere God in everything is the tagline for the Metallica book. And so I was doing that through pop culture and maybe getting a little tired of just looking at that one particular chapter of God's book of creation. And so we started to shift to another chapter, and that was science. I'd gotten an email from Regent College here in Vancouver, and they'd gotten the John Templeton Foundation grant to explore faith and science intersections. And their letter said, you know, we believe God speaks through two books. So they had me at that. And then I got invited to be a part of the project. And while everyone else was looking at sort of conflicts between faith and science, which there's a lot of oxygen that's being sucked up around that issue, all I wanted to do was talk about where God was revealing himself in positive, non-confrontational ways through science. And so I ended up preaching sermons on geophysics and the human kidney and the leg and the hydrology of the Bow River that runs through Calgary here. And so people learned how to trust the language of science through those sermons. And what was cool, to answer your question now, was sitting in one meeting preaching epigenetics, how our bodies imprint our genetic information and pass them on to future generations. I was preaching a sermon on that with a researcher from the local university. And he started to talk about, and he was a Roman Catholic in his background, so he started to talk about the text that we're, creational text that we were exegeting. And I looked at him and I realized that he not only is epigenetics and how it works in the body revelatory of who God is, but he as a scientist is imaging God through his empirical orientation, how he follows the data, how he's good with math, all of these different ways that he, how he intervenes into material reality to change things and catalyze them and transform them, how he names reality for what it is, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. This scientist was a kind of parable through which I could see attributes of God being imaged through his passions and gifts. And that's where it was kind of a tipping point when I realized, okay, not just the epigenetics text, but actually the people who are doing the work image God. And so the book, Every Job a Parable, it talks mostly about the parabolic nature of everyone's work, and then also references the iconic nature of what they work with. But right now I'm kind of at this point where I want to look at how God's revelation through the science of epigenetics and God's revelation through the scientist himself or herself, when they come together, what does that say about who God is? So that's the book I'm writing now. But it happened with a scientist. I looked at a scientist. I saw something of God's empirical heart imaged in him that was authoritative, that was true, that was real, that was powerful. And then I thought, well, if I can see it, and you know, this whole book on vocation has been about stories about me coming alongside all kinds of different professions. And yeah, arguably, it's kind of a prophetic gift, I think, to name where God is already being imaged in the work that you do. And so I did that for him, and it was quite transformative. I mean, he's a scientist. He had to walk away and think about it and process the data. But once he did, he wrote me last year. He said it was a transformative moment for him to know that in the empirical experiment, processing the data moment of science, he's imaging something like that, that very unique, scientific, unique to him and in the field of science experience, is a place where God is gifted with all kinds of attributes and skills and presence. And so it kind of opened a door for him and has for, you know, 70 or 80 different professions or people who work in the writing of this book. So yeah, it happened with him, and then it just continues to unfold. It's not done yet. I'm working with a company here, or a big labor union here in Canada, who've asked me to write a series of books on how a labor negotiator images God. This labor union, it's cool way things work out, was started in Canada in response to a Dutch prime minister named Abraham Kuyper, who is a theologian who wrote a whole bunch of, you know, Kuyper, right? Okay,
yeah.
So Kuyper.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So Kuyper has this idea for a labor union in the Netherlands, which comes over with the immigrants in the 50s to Canada, and they start this labor unit. It's a going concern right now, but they feel like they've lost their roots in terms of their Kuyperian theological foundation. So then they now want me to write a book about the nature of a labor negotiator, whether you're into unions or not. But what does it mean to know God in negotiating and in organizing and in supporting workers in their work, et cetera, et cetera? So the book that you read is now going super deep into one particular kind of vocation. And I think, I don't know if this is a sign that ideas are true, but if they continue to have legs, right, and go from culture to science to work, and then go deep into all those things, I keep experiencing God in the writing and in the preaching and now talking about these things with you and others. It's a big, big idea. You know, when you got stoked at the beginning of this talk, and I'm going, yeah, I can tell you've been drinking this Kool-Aid already.
Yeah, totally. No, it's been great. And yeah, I love so many things about your book. I especially, though, loved how much you talked about Kuyper. Bavinck is one of my favorite theologians. His Dogmatics is like the centerpiece of my library, like the Dutch Reformed masters, right?
Come on.
Yeah, I love it. But then there's this mystical side of you that I feel like really gets at the heart of like the spirit sort of infusing into all of these little things. Yeah. You know what I mean? So you have this dogmatic, really heady theology, but very, very practical and down to earth. And I think that that is the combination that's missed so often when we have these conversations.
You know?
You lean towards one side or the other, right? A lot of times, as we tend to do in all things. So,
Yeah. And I think that's part of the calling and part of the struggle, right? Because I'm preaching this to what I think is the choir when I talk to all kinds of Reformed theologians and seminaries, and I'm kind of getting limited, muted, non-response to the idea of what if we really trained our theologians in seminary to preach this? I mean, this is a unique Reformed accent that to me is uber relevant to people's lives, and it fits with our theology. I'm just reading a book now by Belden Lane called Ravished by Beauty, where he cites Calvin, you know, our theologian of residence over history. And Calvin's, I mean, stuff I never read about Calvin in terms of, I mean, he's got a big view of creation and revelation, but I mean, he even starts to push into near panentheist thought, Calvin, in terms of some of the things he writes, that God is nature, he writes, quote unquote, which he then goes on to clarify, but they're separate in creation and creator. But yeah, there's a huge revelatory history from Kuyper, Bavinck, Calvin, Augustine. I mean, I guess Augustine was pre-Reformational.
we'll claim him.
But it's there, but it's not lived. Like, and I get a sense when I'm reading Belden Lane's book on Calvin, like he gets more into the person of Calvin, and I bet maybe it was there in Bavinck. And I mean, these guys are big brains, clearly,
yes, very much so.
More than you and I, but maybe there was that. Maybe it was an experience thing. Maybe when he was, any of these guys were writing down these amazing sort of worldview truths, they were feeling God with them in that naming process. So,
yeah, no, it's good stuff. I love that. I love that stuff. I'm not in a Reformed church right now, but I know a lot of Reformed people, and I think that theological bent is fascinating, and I love those theologians. So,
yeah, and you know, your listeners are obviously going to be of all kinds of tribes, right? Christian faith wise. But what I'm learning is this isn't just a Reformed idea that God speaks through creation. Any Christian church would agree with that. It's ultimately, in my mind, a biblical idea. The Bible is God's revelation through creation and history and human beings and image bearers, canonized, made text by the Spirit, providentially put together by the Spirit, 100% on God. But if ever there's a strong argument for God speaking through history and life and circumstance and people and creation and nature, it's the Bible. So this is a biblical idea that Reformed thinkers have thought about for a long time. Now maybe it's a time in the church where it can start to hit the ground and transform people's lives. That's my dream.
Very much so. Very much so. On that topic, one of the insights that I got that I'd never really considered about the parables. I mean, this was like first chapter stuff in your book, was how much the parables are down to earth, down home. It's work. Like Jesus is talking about work, like hands on work, farmers, and you know, like the everyday. Can you go into some depth into that sort of parable idea when you talk about jobs? Yeah.
Okay. Well, full confession here. Okay. So you send drafts of these things to your editors or your publisher, and that chapter, you know, I was making all these points about jobs as parables and on all that. And he's going, well, you know, what about Jesus's parables? And I hadn't even written that part. That one sentence that you're naming now, I hadn't written into the book until I had to defend an idea to my editor. And I can still remember the moment of writing it and realizing it just in time. God is a good pre-editor. Timely in terms of the wisdom. I know, right? So then I'm writing this idea, which you were just pointing to, that when Jesus cited people's jobs or seeds or farmers or nature or birds or flowers, like he was not just citing them as illustrative or figures or mere metaphors. He knew what those things were that he was cited, given that all things were made through him. John chapter 1. And so he, you know, and we can argue about how much Jesus knew about the actual science of seeds when he cited a seed. But his parables worked just based on the mystery of seeds and what they become. But was Jesus not doing more than just giving us a spiritual lesson through the parable, which is clearly there and powerfully there? Was he also giving his imprimatur to the created thing that he was citing as, in my worldview, also revelatory? Savvy, shrewd business management practices are of God, and passionate pearl merchant desires to get the best thing and to close that deal is from God. Serving, all the different parables had good creational, vocational things woven into them as well, which, yeah, I think my book maybe kind of introduces the idea or the thought of that being there, and then begins to unpack in a modern day parable kind of context. If Jesus did it then through those parables and vocations that he cited, is he doing it now through general revelation, creation, through your life, through the parable of your work in your place for such a time as this? And if you answer yes or yes to the possibility of that, wow, everything changes. Like the lousiest job, quote unquote, from a societal perspective, has the potential of revelatory presence and power. And if it's a gospel truth we're applying here, it's often the small, unseen, not noticed work where, in my experience, God's been most palpably present, most powerfully present. I'm looking out the front window of my house and remembering the story that starts the first chapter of the book of an old woman who delivered flyers in our neighborhood here, who was 70 some odd years old, pulling a 50-pound wooden wagon through all seasons up and down the hills of our community, handing out flyers, which I hated. I just strayed from the front mailbox into the recycling bin. And yet, I end up looking at her with what I believe was the love of God one day and wondering who she was and what her life was about, and go out and open my door and talk to her and find out it's her last day of work and she's retiring from her job. And I'm thinking, no one's going to give her a gold watch. Who's going to give speeches? Who's going to thank her? You're here now, John. You better do that and do that. And then to my own surprise, and this, the Spirit, God surprising even me, start to name the goodness of her work. And, you know, when you give flyers to people in this community, I imagine there's a lot of people for whom that coupon is saving them money and allowing them to have a sustained life this month or find the thing that they need to purchase. And so even there in the flyer industry, there's some good economic merchandising sales truths, gifts from God that she was mediating through her delivery in the community. So I named that to her, and it felt like I was being God to her and bringing a dignity, speaking a dignity into her work on her retirement day. To me, it was a setup. God wanted to say, I see you, Colleen, and I've seen your work. And, you know, I still see that lady around here, and she volunteers at a church up the road. And so the conversation has continued. But yeah, for a flyer delivery person to see the dignity in her work, I mean, even there, God, of course there, God.
Yeah.
So yeah, beautiful experiences like that have, as you hear, I mean, they're deeply transformative for me. I feel like I get to experience God in the naming and in the coming alongside and the researching and the unpacking of people's jobs. So it's your listeners who work, it's one thing for them to know these truths and start to name and experience God in their places of work. But for you as a pastor and for other pastors, I mean, we do it for selfish reasons. you get to be God's eyes and heart and voice into people's lives in more than just, you know, the pastoral, spiritual, what does the Bible mean here? In a this is what your work means kind of way.
Yeah. Yeah. It's good stuff. I love how adamant you are in the book about every job having some sort of, you know, God, that God is in everything. And I feel like even as I've done this podcast, you know, helping professions, it's super easy, right? Like, you know, I'm one-on-one, I'm helping people, I'm tangibly moving somebody from here to there. Whereas there are other professions that that's not quite so clear. But you were so adamant that every job has, you know, this has God in it and God working through it. And I love that, there is a lot of creativity you've used, to bring those things out and show the truths of those things over and over again.
Yeah.
What are some of the more like surprising jobs that you've sort of come across and sort of seen these things in as you've taken this journey?
Yeah. It's what you're naming was a bit of a surprise to me that's true about this book. Somebody, down at Southern Evangelical Baptist Seminary or something wrote a review of the book and said that this book is different on vocation in that it doesn't just look at the utility of your jobs, what you accomplish for God or for the kingdom or for the common good. It actually looks at the actual workings of your work, the things that you do as being revelatory and God glorifying and places through experiences through which you can know God. So an electrician, it was one place where I was kind of blown away. So I'm sitting in my office a couple of years ago with two electricians, commercial electricians, and they start to explain where they experience God. And it's, you know, for me, it always starts with, what do you love? Where do you find moments of flow in your job? Just goodness, where you lose track of time and space and you're just producing, you're doing what you're there to do, you're creating, you're doing whatever. And these guys responded with the younger one of the two with, you know, wiring in a whole house. And then that first time, that moment when you flip the switch and the lights go on, and he was a singer in a church worship team. And he says, and then it just all goes, ah, and it was, he says, the wallpaper, the walls, you can see the color of the paint for what it is and the carpet and the finishes. And it all just, once the light hits it. And then the other guy talked about, he said, that's cool. He said, but in my commercial context, what I love is when there's an inanimate overhead crane, a brand new installation in some industrial building that is a beautiful crane and wonderfully engineered, but it ain't doing anything until I bring power to it. And then I bring power to it and I get to see that crane moving back and forth across that I-beam and doing what it's made to do. And I hear these two talk about it and I go, it's happening inside of me. I can sort of see that they're made in the image of a God who empowered creation by his spirit breathed into the earth so that the dust became humanity. But, you know, my pneumatology is so huge that that empowers everything, that the Holy Spirit empowers everything in creation so that it can be animated and fully be as a light, as a empowering force that moves creation along. So every time an electrician, you know, makes a connection, flips a switch, empowers things, you know, in the chapter, I go on to think, you know, are these embodied vocational electrician rituals that, were they aware of what they were doing, could be reminders of or experiences of the presence of God. Every time you do that final connection, are you imaging a God who brings power and life to all things? And is God there in the goodness of turning the screw and flipping the switch? So electrician was cool, but hairstylist, cool. That was cool. Yeah. I mean, I could, don't get me going. I could tell stories, right? But yeah, the stylist was, maybe I'll tell one more, but the stylist, the woman who cuts my hair, she's been selling my books in her salon for the last year. Her customers, she turns them right to chapter 10, where we tell the story of that. And she says, my customers will be sitting waiting for their cut, reading that chapter, realizing they were in that chair, experiencing what it is to be physically made new, aesthetically more who you are, allowing someone else to reshape you and remake you and rejuvenate you and see you and touch you. They realize that they were there and they'd be crying in the chair waiting to get in to get their hair cut or styled or colored or whatever. So yeah, a salon, are you serious? Like a stylist job? And so throughout this book, I think there's been a lot of surprises, even there type places, right? Which again, I've heard people say, you know, a lot of people talk about vocation and, you know, teaching jobs or creative jobs or jobs that you know, make a big difference in the world.
Yeah.
But no, in all of these places, in any vocation, I believe that's been the big surprise, is the ubiquity of this parabolic truth that God is working there, can be imaged in theologically through and in every human being in a unique way. And I would argue in each thing's own way, everything through everything that fills the universe, God is revealing himself, is imaged there.
Yeah. Well, and that's a point I was actually wanting to go to next. I think all of that can be done. You can see all of those things as God given because of your huge view of the image of God, of what the image of God actually is. You know,
yeah.
Many theologians have pointed out like particular things that it possibly could be, but you argue against that view, right? With some theological backing from some big names. But can you talk about the image of God
theological backtracking? Okay, so what this is me, you know, you sort of shoot and preach the sermon and then go looking for some theological support for, can I really say that? And it's true. When I tripped upon that Bavinck quote in one of the early chapters that had that huge view of Revelation in it, I was in tears because, okay, one, because it's beautiful that God is revealing himself in these huge cosmic ways, infinitely and infinitesimally ways. But also that it was even there, that somebody before me, I thought, where did Bavinck get my idea?
Yeah,
God's idea. Bavinck writes about image bearing, right? In terms of, traditionally we've seen it in our rationality, maybe our creativity, our capacity to commune with other people, our relationality, our capacity to steward creation and lead creation. And, you know, those are kind of the four biggies.
Yeah.
But why does it have to stop there? He argues. And he argues that our whole beings, so not just those categories, but our whole beings image the whole being of God. And he's not, at first I thought he's saying we're God. No, but everything that you are as a human being, and maybe especially that you are with your unique capacities, images God. So your faculty with the fact that you're good with hand-eye coordination or good with color or a great listener or able to discern a way forward out of a tough business conundrum. I mean, the list goes on. All of those things image God. And yeah, this book, in a way, just kind of, it's the tip of the iceberg. It only names 70 or 80 different kinds of jobs or people, and how they, I'm sure for the electricians out there, they're going, yeah, there's probably a dozen other ways that electricians image God. And so, yeah, this idea of a huge, broadened understanding of the image of God, and then, yeah, step into it, through the lens of the scriptures, through your understanding and theology of Jesus, of the gospel, of revelation, of the Holy Spirit, that is clear and in black and white and there in the Bible, wearing all of that, go out into your job, your life, your world, and listen and start to, I've gotten to places where I thought I had a handle on this. It's been at first I would only preach a sermon on something that caught me off guard during the week or in the weeks leading up to the preaching of that sermon, because then I knew that the Spirit was kind of going, look there. And all of a sudden the Bible passage would show up and this beautiful co-illumining truth would come together and I'd preach a sermon on it. And then I got to the point where I would actually just, that's a cool movie. Let's look at that. And we'd advertise that we were going to do it, but I hadn't had the co-illumining moment yet, but sure enough, it was there, right? And then it got to a point where with hubris and pride and, you know, you get full of yourself and you start to lose sight of the fact that this was God's idea and is God's idea, not yours. You kind of push it out beyond, right? And you kind of, go too far with it. But I'm moving into confession here because I did that. That's how I've ended up in this transition place that I'm in right now for the past year, trying to figure out where to go next with it. I'm doing this because this big idea, I feel God has calling me, telling me to make more room in my life for this big idea to get out into the world. And that's the good part of the rationale for moving in this direction. But the bad part, where the hubris part came in, is that I think I was trying to own this idea as though it was part of my brand or, you know, your thing, right? That you're able to see God in the world, and losing track of the fact that, you know, all of this, I've been playing catch up from the beginning and God has been laying out the idea. And then I've been catching up in terms of implementing and then understanding the theology of it. So yeah, that, I mean, this will move into full confession mode. No one else is listening here, are they?
Right, that's right.
I was at a Blue Jays game last fall. I'd preached a sermon the year before on the Major League Baseball and the theology of baseball and what it means to know God through this this great game. And the sermon video went viral here in Canada, and a bunch of people watched it, and the media picked it up, and the Blue Jays picked it up the following year. Their marketing people for the owners, and they said, "Hey, they sent me a piece of paper. Said, can you sign off on your rights to your sermon so that we could use it for our marketing plan for the Jays?" And you know, you could feel how heady this gets, right? And being a pastor, I let that in. So we did that. We did an interview. And then they gave us free tickets, my wife and I, to go to Toronto and sit in the owner's box and watch the second last game of the season. They're going into the playoffs again. And they were going to play my interview with him on the Jumbotron. And they did between the first and the second innings. So the as the first inning's ending, the guy leans over and says, "Watch the Jumbotron." So we're watching. And sure enough, they interviewed a few different people. And there I am, my big fat lemon on the Jumbotron. Talking about the theology of baseball. And I had a moment, and people have chided me and said, "You're way too hard on yourself." But you know that you know that you know as a pastor and as a human being when you are crossing a line. And I had a moment where I had the thought, "Oh, you should take a picture of yourself on the Jumbotron." So narcissistic. And I knew I shouldn't. Just let it be. Just enjoy the moment. Thank God for it. But I think God was so not in the room in my mind, my heart at the time, that I reached into my pocket, and I grabbed my phone, and I took a photo of me being interviewed and this thing on the Jumbotron at the Rogers Center in Toronto. And then I came back to work the following day, and a whole bunch of conflict started to creep up, and I was in the middle stages of burnout. I didn't realize it at the time. And I kind of crashed, and I needed a break, and I had to get away. And so God's way of accomplishing the, "I need you to move away from this pastoring job so that you have more room in your life to do this thing with this big vision," came through the root of a deeply humbling, disquieting, uncomfortable, so uncomfortable, so difficult. You know, at points, you don't even know if you can do your job, right? You don't know if you have the capacity. You're just so full of yourself, and how do I get rid of this? And so I'm in the place right now where I'm not in quite as desolate a place as I've just described. And grace is good, and God is more present again, and I'm remembering why I'm in this business again for the first time. But yeah, the humbling to me is crucial for the first part. How do you get a big idea out there? It's not about you. No, I just read in Isaiah 26, verse 12 this morning. I'm paraphrasing, but everything that I've accomplished, God, has come through you. Like, there isn't a thing that I've done that hasn't come through you. So back to your vocation and calling, there isn't a thing that you or any of your listeners or any of us does that hasn't come through him. Yeah, so I've gone through a year of kind of humbly re-engaging the truth of that and really knowing it to be true, hopefully so that, you know, whatever this next step is going to be can be stepped into. But I'm actually at the point now where, you know, if that's the piece, this is the piece, God, you wanted me to do, and I'm 57, I guess I could retire and not be this person talking about these things anymore or going deeper. I'd be okay with that. Somebody else maybe can do that. You know, Curry over there outside Chicago can other people can pick it up. It's not all on me. It's not all on me to do it. Of course not. So yeah, how did we get here, Curry?
That was great. I really appreciate you being willing to share that. I was thinking as I was reading your story, because I read the blog post about that event in your life. And I guess in my mind, in my 20s, maybe even recently as like last week, I keep thinking that there's going to be this point in my life in which all these great mysteries of vocation and calling are sort of made clear, and that I am in the job that I'm in, and I'm where I'm supposed to be, and it's like totally affirmed all the time, right? And I look at people and I look at the world and those around me, and that never actually happens in one's life. I mean, you're an example of that, like with the story you just told. Like, calling and vocation are such a deep part, an integral part of who we are and what we do, and yet it seems very tumultuous at all times, you know, or a lot of the time, you know. There's always movement and there's always God taking us into deeper areas. Do you think there's some sort of like analogy there between sort of who God is sort of making us be and the tumultuousness that comes from our vocation and calling?
Well, if Jesus is any example, no, right. The ultimate calling, right?
Yeah,
right. And you get killed. You give up, you're called to give up your life. So, I mean, the thesis of the book is that, I mean, I don't know if it's this clearly or succinctly stated, but the purpose of your work ultimately is that you know God and experience God in your life more in this particular context through your work. And if knowing God more through your work means going through difficulties at work or feeling small at work or not getting paid as much as you'd like at work or not having the esteem or being as much of a leader or having as much success, or then arguably, I mean, those things, those metrics aren't the metrics. So back to my story, this past year, I've come to know him and to love and to trust and to like when you're in the middle of burnout, like, I don't even know if I can have the energy to ever work again. I don't know if I got to the point where I went, I don't know that I trust my discernment anymore, which has kind of been, my gut has been it for business before the calling. And this whole ministry has been about discerning what's happening in the moment. And all of these books are kind of, they're not born out of a deep theological engagement with rational categories. It's kind of in your gut and spirit and heart. You see something. And I don't even know if I can trust that anymore. And God's answer was, right. You can't. Even that's a gift. And so my vocation in the messy place it's been over the last year has been more productive in terms of the ultimate goal of knowing God more and trusting God more with everything. Because more of what defines everything is now making up everything for me. And if that's true for me, and I think it's true for you and all people in ministry and in work everywhere, you know, near the end of the book, start to talk about the idea that these experiences of good God imaging vocational moments are a foretaste of what I believe, a new heaven come down to earth, a new earth with work as it should be. And we'll all know God perfectly through all that we do, that there are foretastes of that. If humbling you and allowing hardship to come into your life and not giving you what you want so that you get what you need is what plays out, then thank you, Lord. I'll take it any day. Amen. I mean, right. You and I were both reading stories about star pastors in our profession who've gone off the cliff and I don't know that I was that far from going off some cliff somewhere, you know, with that whole Jumbotron thing and me getting in the way. I don't think anybody who went off that cliff in the ministry thought, you know, at the age of 55, I'm going to go and do vocational suicide and fall into sin in this way. So it is a grace that God keeps us humble in our places. And so, I guess back to the original question, if knowing God is why we're here, then metrics of vocational success that society pushes aren't necessarily a sign or a necessity for that knowing God process to flourish, and sometimes get in the way. In my experience, often get in the way.
Yes, John, that's such good stuff. It's like we share a brain right now, because
I was sitting here thinking, we have got to get into new creation, because I think that is sort of the end all be all of this entire thing, and sums up so much of what we've talked about, from the image of God being all encompassing. I think that goes throughout the entirety of the Bible. It's the string that goes throughout into new creation. And the way you talk about vocation and new creation, I think, is another level than most people have sort of thought about or heard about. Do you mind sort of talking about new creation and
Yeah. Well, it was Daryl Cosden, actually. I forget the name of his book, but a theologian wrote a book about how the good that we do now goes on into the new world, right? And then he cites Jesus, resurrected with wounds still. So evidence of his work and his productivity, and, you know, the Lamb who's wounded sitting on the throne in Revelation, right? So what we do now goes on, continues into that new world. And kind of, sacramentally, he drew this line for me. And then, when you start to, if that's true, then I begin to ask, so what does that particular image-bearing attribute, what would it look like in perfection? So in one chapter in the book, a friend of mine who ran a national asphalt road paving company, we had this back and forth dialogue about, so what would an asphalt company executive, what would that business look like on heaven, in heaven, on earth, right? Yeah. And we started to imagine that together. And so there's an image bearing that God builds into you and creates into you before you were even conceived or born, and that God has grown in you to bring you to this place. There's a fulfillment of that image bearing and your work as part of it that is a heavenly vision for what it is, kind of pulling you in that direction. There's a Holy Spirit who's holding the whole cosmos together all around you, tending to that image bearing and wanting through, I believe, through the God wanting through the work of the Spirit, you to know God in your work and grow and come to know God more. Yeah. So the eschatological part was pulling. That was the great new yes moment for me. And Cosden, if you go, I can't remember the name of his book, put it in your show notes.
Yeah, I'll put it in the show notes. I actually looked the book up recently and I can't even remember.
It was just great, this idea that it's more than just a job.
Yeah, right.
I mean, we spend so much time, right? 40, 50 hours a week doing what we do, like everything God's going to want to teach us is going to happen, on a Sunday or Wednesday night church thing. Of course not. That he would be moving in this vocational way, revelatory way, connected way back and looking so far ahead. Of course God did it this way.
Yeah. When you pose this question in there that just has sort of resonated with me, which is, what would the world look like if even all Christians, but if people saw the way that God worked through their vocation, how would that change the entirety of the world? And I think that's just pressing on me, because
in the book, I'm here in Calgary, right? A city of 1.2 million in Canada, Western Canada. And that's in the book. I just barely scratched the surface into the dream of that, right? But what if an architect, knowing God through their architecture and how just right space is just right, made in the image of a God who created space and a universe in this world, and they do their thing knowing God, and then engaging contractors and engineers and a city, and just start to see it rippling out, everyone engaging God through the parable that is their job. Not all coming together on Wednesday night to sing in the choir or to go to a small group Bible study, but actually knowing God in the interaction of architect and engineer, and architects looking at engineers as builders and seeing the building heart of God, even as engineers and contractors are looking at the designers and seeing the designing heart of God. And so you're engaging the parable within your own life through what you do, but then your life is surrounded by vocational parables. creational parables as well. And so we're all just knowing God and hearing God's voice and being God's voice through all of these things. And how is that not heaven on earth? And what would that mean for a city, you know, the city of Calgary fully becoming itself, right? We're kind of Houston North, right? So we're a real oil and gas city, and that's all the negativity around that. But Canada become Calgary, you know, is ultimately a city that God means to be a source of engineering and ingenuity and renewable energy, and one day fully being ourselves as a city. And that's who we are. And Paris is Paris, and Chicago is Chicago. And yeah, all of us city to city knowing God through city specializations, et cetera, et cetera. This whole image bearing thing just keeps rippling out in deeply compelling ways in my imagination.
Yeah. And sorry, excuse me.
Were you crying there? I think.
Yes, a little bit. It's this beautiful vision. And it's back to what we're talking about. It's a new creation.
Yeah.
That is what the new creation is. And we're living in this, like you said, already and not yet, where we can experience the kingdom in certain ways through our vocation. But the not yet is what we're pushing to, and that in our vocations in the new creation, we will be fully aware of our image bearedness. You know, we will be with God, and like you talk about in the book, we will work at knowing him more and more, like this great God who is so far beyond us.
Yeah.
It's just this, like, yes, please, Lord, you know, like, Lord, haste the day that we are there with you, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, back to the idea of small jobs not often being recognized through these faith and vocation conversations. The idea occurred to me about a year ago. I just tweeted it out that on that new heaven and earth, all of the jobs that we do the faith, strong faith connections with now really easily, like doctors and pastors and missionaries and, you know, caregivers and working for the common good in very practical, social, relational ways, those will probably, I mean, will we need police officers? Will we need firefighters? I don't know. Yeah. How many angels on the head of that pin there are, but to me that just really reinforced, you know, just ordinary jobs, your job, working at a prison or paving roads or teaching, students, like, of course, God in those places, right? That those things for sure will be teaching and growing and maintaining cities and designing and creating, because that eternity will go on for eternity. And I think we'll be knowing more about God, an infinite God, an unplumbable God forever. So science will go on forever, and philosophy and all the things we are teaching each other. So those jobs for sure we're going to need.
Yeah, that's why I'm farming right now. I'm trying to get ahead of the game, you know, get some skills built up. So, okay. I could literally sit here and talk to you about this forever. I've already got like part two of this interview in my head. So, you're probably going to be hassled by me at some point to follow up to all this, because I've really enjoyed talking to you about all this stuff. And you can tell it sort of gets my energy going, and all that stuff. So thank you for your time. I do have two questions though, before we, finish up here.
Sure.
Is that okay?
Yep.
Okay. So first, what is the strangest job that you have ever had?
When I was a teenager, my dad worked at a big bank in downtown Toronto. And, when I was 14, they needed some part-time summer workers, who they could trust to shred bonds. So these bonds that were worth tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars that had been cashed in or expired. I didn't even understand the math, but I had to stand at a shredder with my younger brother, Al, and we would just be shredding millions of dollars worth of bonds. And I just, it was so heady. Like, you know, who gets this? I had to wear a tie and dress pants and a dress shirt. I've never exegeted the job of destroying money or financial instruments. But that was a really, really cool job. Loved that job. So that would be my oddest job.
That is so random. That's amazing.
Yeah,
that's
there,
like,
you go.
This is my favorite question in the podcast, because you just never know what's about to be said. So, And then finally, what is one piece of advice you would give? And I know you have a lot of advice, a lot of great advice, but what's one piece of advice you would give to somebody looking to bring God or see God in their vocation?
Ask. And as I alluded to earlier, think about that question of what you love. What's the most deeply meaningful, true, real, alive, a flow-inducing moment you have at work? And don't just think about it abstractly while you're at home at night, but think about it during the day when you're doing your work. Catch yourself in that moment, feeling the goodness of that, and find that. And if you can find that and name that or begin to name that, carrying all that you know about God through the scriptures and your faith, and go talk to a pastor or read this book or read other books about vocation, and then start to unpack, well, how is God? How does that image God? You're well on your way. But yeah, ask. I think God wants nothing more than for you to know him at work more, in every part of life more. So ask.
Oh, so well said. That's amazing advice. I appreciate that very much. So John, thanks again. I really do appreciate it. It was good to get to know you and looking forward to the new book coming out. So.
All right, Curry. Thanks for having me again.
Well, I hope you enjoyed this episode with John. I am really working on getting people in that can really push this theology of hustle down the road. So I got a lot of great guests still coming. Be sure you're subscribed on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever so that you don't miss an episode. And until next time, get out there and hustle.